This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's quite humbling to be with such a delegation of our members, and I'm extremely proud to be here with you today. I'd like to start by saying a thank you to the working media that is here. It's a difficult job you have, we know, and tight deadlines, and we'll try our best to keep to a tight line so that you can make your deadlines. We're here today to present the report on the formation of a new union. A report that has been drafted by a joint committee and that unanimously recommended it to our two unions. The report itself, as you will note, recommends the creation of a new union in Canada. By the way, both National Union Executive Boards have also endorsed the recommendation of this proposal. The proposal committee was crafted by the two unions and worked very hard in a very short timeline, deadline, to get to this position. The report embraces a new vision for the unions, the two unions involved, but also a new vision for the labor movement. And I think we take that very seriously, our responsibility. This is the largest coming together of two unions in the history of Canada. It is an important occasion, and we know the labor movement is watching, as well as corporate and political Canada. It is proposed a new union for new times, a new political and economic reality. Everyone knows since the Great Depression of 2007 and 2008, the rules have changed in our relationship with governments and with corporations, and we envision this new union as being able to more effectively and efficiently take forward the needs and desires of working people across Canada. For this new union and the labor movement to be successful, it must be profoundly democratic. It must be profoundly democratic. Both our unions will take these proposals to our conventions, the Auto Workers Convention, which is in August, and ours in October, and our members will get to debate and decide whether to go forward with this proposal. When we're finished this process, we will have a founding convention, assuming that everything goes according to the plan. We will have a founding convention sometime in the year 2013, next year. The report itself talks about change. Change for us, change for the labor movement, and change for Canada. The report envisions all of that and deals explicitly on how and when and where we should get there. The new union will have the largest organizing capacity of any union in Canada. It will have a significant ability to provide education to our members. And quite frankly, it'll have the ability to fight. We will have a very significant defense fund to enable us to take on the struggles that our members want us to take on. bringing together the two unions created an opportunity for us to be represented in every corner of our country, in every region and every community. And you'll see in the document the exact details of our representation. The new union will be, I can assure you, will be very visible and extremely active. And we will ensure we make change in the labor movement and in our relationship with those communities. The new union goes beyond the current models of unions. We are going to step out of the box. It is a promise. We are going to do things differently. We are going to represent workers who may never have a traditional collective agreement, who may never have a single employer. We will represent workers who, in fact, may be seeking work or students about to go to work. We are not going to be constrained by the old rules of law about how you represent workers. So those who don't have collective agreements will have an opportunity, if they so desire, to be represented by a union. We will represent workers in both the private and in the public sector. And I want to close on this. We want to ensure that any worker in Canada who wants to be represented by a union will be represented by a union. I am extremely proud to introduce the next presenter, the president of the CAW, Ken Lewenza.
Thank you.
Thank you. Stay here.
First of all, I share in David's enthusiasm. I want to thank CAW CEP members for their incredible contribution, for their participation over the last few months, because without the support of our membership, quite frankly, we can't do this particular work. I want to thank David and leadership of CEP for their friendship over the months and over the years, as we've had a common vision in defense of workers throughout this country for many, many years. Our common vision now is coming into one vision in defense of our members. Also, if I can, I want to acknowledge, because this union can't work in isolation. Today we have Sid Ryan here, the president of the Ontario Federation of Labour, who I just talked to is inspired about the opportunity to fight back and win. We have John Cartwright here, the president of the Metro Toronto Labour Council, the biggest labour council in all of Canada. And of course, we've got my colleague and friend in the New Democratic Party and the finance critic for all of Canada, that someday the New Democratic Party has the potential to be elected and change the direction course for 99% of the Canadians that are left out of the political system. Peggy Nast, a member of parliament for Parkdale. So let me begin by saying that Canadian labor has a lot to be proud of. In spite of all of the challenges we've had, we're still standing, and we're standing tall, and we're standing with great pride against tremendous odds when one takes a look at the incredible challenges we've had to deal with in the last 3 or 4 years. So today, we stand here with pride. We stand here with determination. We stand here with strength, recognizing that it's been tough on the men and women that we represent, and it's tough. Even tougher, I would suggest, on those men and women out there from every class of society that isn't being represented because they don't have a trade union movement to represent their interests. So when you take a look at this new union and whatever our objectives are, it's about building strength. It's about building pride. It's about building our ability to deal with the 99% of the population that's excluded from today's society. So once again, it's important to us. It's also important to say that, again, the information from the newest OECD report on labor and capital share of the pie in Canada was just released. Study shows that labor share of the national income in Canada has fallen over the last 20 years from 63.5% to 60.3%. That is a challenging time for our members and society in general when you see those kind of statistics. Workers' wages have largely stagnated over the last 3 decades. And today we're seeing the consequences of that through growing dissatisfaction, inequality, and mistrust of government. Workers deserve better from this economy, deserve better from their unions, and those that need the voice of the union deserve better. Labor rights and the role of society is a challenging time. The RAND formula and the right to work is being discussed out there. United States, Michigan, Wisconsin style of tax are now being debated in Canada. When I look at our retirees here today, does it sound like the 40s again? Does it sound like the 30s again? As people try to tear down the movement and tear down society, not just the trade union movement, but the aspirations of many Canadians. Labor rights will be the central policy issue, warning to politicians that we will defend democracy and our rights in every way necessary. The new union will be born into this struggle and defined by it. We will challenge the status quo. We will fight for a larger, more influential role in the economy and in society. This is a historic day for our union, for CEP, for CEW, who both of us have great pride in our separate organizations, but recognize the status quo is not acceptable in winning justice for workers as we move forward. This is a proud day for all of us. It's a proud accomplishment after many work from our proposal committee, hours putting the best practices of both unions together, the best ideas of both unions together. I want to raise in the forefront, obviously our membership will make the last decision, but we went from city to city, we went to province, we met with our leadership, we met with our activist base, and there's a sense of enthusiasm out there that I have not seen for the labor movement for some time. So we're proud of our accomplishments, we're excited, we are inspired, we are looking forward to the opportunities, the challenges that are ahead, and they are going to be significant. All of the speeches in the world aren't going to deal with those challenges. It's going to be dealt with on activism on the ground, building and growing coalitions and building respect for one another. Even though from time to time we have differences, we have more in common than we have in different. And we've got to fight for those common injustices of economic and social justice. Our goal is simple. We want to launch this new union in 2013. We want the democratic processes of CEP and CAW to work itself out in the next few months. And sometime in 2013, we will bring all of our coalition partners together. We will bring both organizations together. And we will have a vision for Canada that's much different than the vision we have today. My last point is to governments. We intend to change the unequal labor rules in this country. In every single province in the country, workers ought to have the right to organize and not be impeded by employers' threat of them losing their job. Workers ought to have a democratic right. So when you take a look at it today, and I know there's others out there who will be very critical of our union, and there will be people out there that will say maybe the union's outdone itself. Maybe we don't need unions anymore. The reality is today, if you take a look at the 99% of working men and women, and we are the 99%. We are being left out of the economic system. And we have young people out there with the highest unemployment rate we've ever dealt with no opportunity to have the same job that these retirees have had over their 40 or 45 years. We have retirees that are out there today recognizing and understanding that if we don't maintain an increase Canada pension and old age security, they will be continued to live in insecurity and in poverty. And then we have working men and women every single day that have this black cloud over their head, that expect more from their employer and society. And our message is, as a combined organization, we're going to defend those rights. We're going to win justice. We're going to partner with labor councils. We're going to partner with affiliated unions. We're going to partner with this great university called Ryerson, where there's a lot of activism that needs a voice in our union. So, once again, David, thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your friendship. Thanks to the proposal committee. I want to thank my national executive board, who has unanimously endorsed this thought process. I want to thank our CAW council delegates, our retirees council that are here today, that seen our union leave the UAW and build some pride and some sense of security into our change in CAW. This is another opportunity for working men and women to stand up and say, I'm proud to belong to a new union established by the combined friendship of CEP and CAW. Without any further ado, the folks that do the work on the ground, the people that led the proposal committee and have put their heart and soul into their efforts in the last 3 or 4 months, without any further ado, the co-chair from the CAW, my colleague, my partner, my friend, Peter Kennedy. Well, thank you very much, Ken. And I too want to start out by saying how much I share the enthusiasm of Ken and David for this new organization that we're launching here today and the work that we've done to this point in time. And I guess the question out there on the minds of many is, so what's new? Well, the reality is that from its inception, this has been a strategic, proactive initiative. We're talking about creating a new organization. What's new is that this isn't a merger. It isn't the same old, same old. It isn't what would normally happen in these kinds of situations where perhaps out of an act of desperation, one union seeks a home with another union. This is an act of hope, an act to challenge and take back the agenda. So from the conceptual point of view, the whole concept, quite frankly, is new, and we're laying that foundation for the new organization here today. The other thing, this is the first union to be born in public. The whole process from its inception, from the genesis, has been very transparent. It's been very open. Our membership have been involved in the process. The proposal committee, consisting of 8 senior leaders from both unions, have met now for 5 different meetings over a period of 3 or 4 days at a time, so probably 18 days in total to put this report together. But after every meeting, the results of the meeting have been posted on the joint website that we've had. We've issued communiques and reports to the membership. We've had leadership meetings, as Ken has alluded to, across the country, where more than 1,000 leaders from CEP and CAW have come together to give their input into the process, to give their thoughts on what this new organization should look like. There's been frequently asked questions on the website. There's been interaction on the website. There's been all kinds of input into the process and into the finished creation, the new union that, again, we are launching here today. Normally, that would happen amongst senior leaders behind closed doors. It would be taken to the national executive boards and then ultimately to memberships. That's not the case. It's been transparent, it's been open, and it will continue to be so as we move into the next steps throughout this proposal committee, or through the process after we take it to our respective conventions in August and October for ratification by our convention delegates. In terms of the union itself, what's new is, for a start, new name, a new identity, a new logo. And the name will not be a list of the organizations that we represent, the sectors in which we work, our occupations. Amongst our leadership meetings, it was a clear consensus that was developed that, in fact, the name of the new organization needs to reflect the scope and the value of that new organization. There will be a process, again, where we will engage our membership. We will seek professional advice, and we will test. But we will have a name that will be synonymous with the kinds of ideals that both David and Ken can talk about. This morning, I can't reveal the name. I can tell you it will not be the National Chemical Communications, Energy, Paper Workers, Automobile, Aerospace, Transportation, and General Workers Union of Canada.
Healthcare,
and all of those sectors. I mean, you just cannot get that on a T-shirt or a ball cap. But it will reflect the workers that we represent. It will reflect our values, and it will reflect our goals. The identity of the new organization, truly a national organization. Both our unions today claim to be national, but if you look at the demographics, in some places on the ground, we're pretty sparse. The new union will represent both public and private sector, and really will be a union from coast to coast to coast. And as has been pointed out previously, It will not just represent those in certified bargaining units. Another new feature of the new union, it will be open to the unemployed, it will be open to students, it will be open to self-employed, it will be open to freelance workers, it will be open to anybody who shares the values. It will be open to anybody who shares the values that our organization will represent. We are going to make an unprecedented commitment to organizing. 10% of the revenue of the new union will be directed exclusively to organizing. That means in the first 5 years of the new union's life, we will spend over $50 million on organizing campaigns to bring in new members. To our unions. There will be a commitment to equity and diversity that exists in no other organization today. Rank and file leadership and accountability, one of the predominant features of this new organization. Of the 25-person National Executive Board, 19 positions will be filled by rank and file leadership. Only six officers. This will not be a top-heavy union bureaucracy. This will be an activist organization led by rank-and-file leaders. Commitment to education. We will commit more funds to education than either of our organizations are doing today to make sure that we do the two things that are fundamental for the growth of any trade union, and that is organize and educate, and we make that commitment as well. The new union will have a critical mass in at least 20 key sectors of the Canadian economy. And if you just look at some major ones in terms of how they break down, communications, over 40,000 members. Transportation, over 40,000 members. Resources, over 52,000 members. Manufacturing, over 94,000 members. Services, over 76,000 members. 310,000 members in total, 86,000 women in the new organization, more than most federations of labor in this country. So this indeed is an exciting day. It is my pleasure now to introduce the co-chair of the proposal committee, my colleague, a friend who I've had the pleasure of working with for the last period of time, National Secretary Treasurer of CEP, Gaetan Menard.
Thank you very much, Peter. What a great day today. Je voudrais commencer par dire en français aux médias en français, je serai disponible après la rencontre pour des entrevues. I'm very proud to be here today, and I think it's a very good idea to hold this presentation in a university, because I strongly believe that that day, the report we are presenting to you, and more important, the result of that report, will be studied for many, many years by academics, because why? Because it's going to change the face of this country. As Peter said, I think it's very important to come back on this. 86,000 women will be members of that new organization. All the history of the world has shown that when it's time to fight for social justice, when it's time to do a revolution, who are the first one on the, at the end? The women are there, and they will be there. So I'm very proud to say that there will be, we are recommending in this report, we are recommending that there would be a constitutional requirement that women will be represent at the same level as their level of membership on the board of the new organization, which is very important. We also, Peter said, we won't be an organization that is only bureaucratic. We will be active. Ken talked about it. Dave talked about it. And it's important to reflect that in the structure that we are proposing. And we are proposing a structure where we will bring together thousands of delegates every year. Every year, the delegates all across the country will come together and first, of course, receive the report from their leadership and from their staff, but also give direction. That is democracy. When you have thousands of delegates coming together every year, giving direction to their leadership, I strongly believe this is how you build an active union. That will help a lot. We are also proposing in that structure some regional structure where delegates will meet in the regions, in BC, Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, in the Atlantic. This country is very, very large, and I think it's very, very important that regional issues got to be discussed in the region, and that's why we are proposing that type of structure, some regional councils where delegates from all those regions will meet together every year again to address those issues. Another point that I'm very proud of is we got to recognize the fact that this country has changed. The time where you were either French or Anglo, black or white, is over. And it's many years that it's over. And this organization's got to recognize that. Diversity is going to be at the central of the new organization. And we got to make sure that we will be able to connect with those communities, to connect with those ethnic communities that all over the country, and make sure that they come and being part of that movement, being part of that fight that we want to do, and representing all the workers, as it has been said, including those people. One of the other thing that I'm very proud of in that report is, and it was not that we had some tough discussion. We got to say we had some difficult discussion. You don't sit and think at something like that without having good discussion and sometimes tough discussion. But one thing that wasn't tough at all was the recognition of the national character of Quebec. Right from the beginning, both organizations said the Quebec is distinct. The Quebec will be recognized in our structure, having his own little structure for their Quebec Council, where they will meet, where they will decide up their politics. So that is recognized in our organization. And I think we got to be proud of that. What we want to build is an organization that will be present in each and every community across the country. This is where it all starts. This is where it all starts. It's where with your neighbors, with your friends, with your brothers and sisters in your family, in the community. This is where we got to be connected. This is where we got to be present, and this is where we got to be active. We want this organization becoming the reference for social justice issues everywhere in each community of this country. And I strongly believe that the structure we are building and the way we are addressing that, I think that this is what's going to happen. Think of this. That organization will have more than 20,000 local union activists. Just being the person that are elected at a position at a local level, regional level, and all that. 20,000 activists all across the country, showing in each of their community that we are there to fight, we are there to represent the workers, we are there to fight for workers with job or not, as it has been said before, we are there to represent the working class in general, to defend their rights, and to push for more and more social justice. The new union then will have, as I said, 20,000 local activists all across the country present in the communities, and I think that will be very important. That will be the key to make sure that we connect with the community. Again, this is where it all started. This is where it's going to happen. I'm very proud, very, very proud to be here today. And I'd like to finish with this. Thanks to CEP members who gave me this opportunity to be part of that team, to be part of that group who has created that report. Thanks to the proposal committee, I think we have accomplished a lot in a very short time of period. Please, please, brothers and sisters, take the time to read the report. Take the time to read it. You're going to see a vision. You're going to see what we want to achieve. You're going to see something that I believe will change the face of this country. So read that report. There's lots of stuff in it. Why were we able to accomplish so much in a so short period of time? I think it's David who said that. It's true. I mean, we have started our discussion in December. So short period of time? Well, because I was going to say on both sides of the table, but there was not both sides of the table. We were two groups right from the beginning that decided that we were not there to negotiate a merger deal. We were there to develop a vision of what's needed, of what type of response has got to be for the attack that the working class is suffering right now in this country. So we worked all together. There was commitment. There was trust. There was willingness. We were not two groups. We were one group working together to develop that vision. And I'm going to finish with this. To Harper, to Wall, to UDAC, and to all of those politicians who want to attack the workers in this country, well, get ready, because in very short period, we will have the largest organization that will kick your butt. Thank you very much.
So we'll take questions at any particular time, and I would, you know, ask the media at any time to engage the rank and file leadership that are around the room. You don't have to listen to the four leaders of both combined unions. There's a lot of enthusiasm going on, and we feel equally proud to represent the members of both unions. So we'll take any questions from the media at this particular time. Go ahead. Anybody? Go ahead. Yep. Well, we're not top-heavy today. In the Canadian Auto Workers Union, three elected officers are elected at our national convention. That's the president, the secretary, treasurer, and myself. And obviously, we have an executive board that represents major sectors of our particular union. So when you talk about shedding, the size of our combined union will be consistent with the kind of union that we have today under one. And did you want that answer in French? No, because I want, you know... No. No, I think you'd prefer his French than mine. Go ahead. Well, negotiations with the big three are going to be tough. And, you know, we recognize that it gets a lot of public attention. But this new union is about negotiations in every sector of the economy, for every worker in the economy. Workers feel in isolation today. And what this says to the big three is that we're thinking outside the box. We're building on our strengths. We're building on our aspirations to make progress for our members. We're building on the expectations that our retirees will continue to be taken care of with the confidence that's necessary. So it's hard for me today to prejudge the big three bargaining, because the corporations, in my perspective, are being overzealous. But at the end of the day, when I go to the bargaining table and open up negotiations with the master bargaining committees, I'll be glad to tell them that now we represent tentatively over 300,000 members in Canada. Each and every one of them build automobiles, and they expect a little respect and decency to the members from Chrysler, General Motors, and Ford. So, you know, bargaining is going to be tough, but I think strengthening the union and strengthening the capacity to win justice can only pay dividends at the bargaining table. Well, we've historically never went to the bargaining table with just the CAW. I've always got the support of the Ontario Federation of Labour, the Canadian Labour Congress, the Labour Councils. In fact, I might think outside the box this time and invite each and every one of them to the opening, for they can address what it means to the communities to have good jobs, value-added jobs, jobs that pay good wages, good benefits, and good conditions. And in return, they're doing incredibly well on the retail side. So maybe I'll bring a few consumers to the bargaining table just to remind the corporations that they like to buy their products. But at the end of the day, people need good jobs, good opportunities, and young people, quite frankly, need to have some opportunities that they don't see that's possible today. So, again, bargaining is one issue. I wish every employer would just do what we ask them to do. That's just not the way it works. If it did, workers would be treated with decency, be decent respect. So we'll deal with those challenges in the next couple of months. Go ahead, brother.
I'm Mark Belange from Radio Labor. Mr. Coles said, you said that it's not going to be a traditional union. You're going to organize the unemployed, the students. And Mr. Kennedy said there's $50 million set aside for organizing. My question is, how is it going to work in representing people who are not traditional union members with traditional employers? And is some part of that $50 million going to be set aside for that activity?
Good deal.
Well, it's not new to us to attempt to do that already. We, in our union, and I'm sure is the case in many, do represent freelance workers. We have a local currently that our members do not have employers. It is complicated, yes. And yes, we are going to use some of that $50 million to organize workers that don't work in traditional workplaces. And yes, it will be complicated, but we've experimented with the model. The CAW has, others. We can do it and will do it.
One of the things we anticipate, Mark, is coming out of the chute, there's going to be a lot of interest in this new organization, and that will provide an opportunity. One of the things going forward we're going to do is establish a number of working groups, one of which will be an organizing working group. And between now and the founding convention in 2013, they will be working on exactly how that happens and what resources will be allocated and just how we catch the wave, so to speak, when the new organization is launched in 2013.
You know, we'd love to be able to work with the private sector and employers in the interest of Canadians, in the interest of workers, in the interest of those most vulnerable. But they have put us in isolation, where our voice is not welcomed around the government tables and not welcomed in the private sector. If you take a look today, the private sector is not investing in jobs, not investing in technology, not redistributing their wealth into the workplace, generating and creating jobs. They're holding on to their monies, and shareholders are doing incredibly well, which is creating a significant unemployment problem and a significant underemployed problem. We talk about statistics about unemployed, but we've got to talk about workers that are underemployed and those that have no opportunity to have jobs. So to answer your question, the day that the private sector and the governments want to treat working men and women with the respect that they deserve, we will be at the table. We are a partner in the economy. We're a partner in social justice. We want to find resolves that put dignity and respect on the top of the list versus poverty. And so we say to the employers today, you know, there's two ways of dealing with it. You could treat workers with the respect and the dignity that they deserve, and we can work together to build an economy where everybody has an opportunity to prosper. Or you can continue to invest in yourselves and the shareholders and take a percentage more than everybody else has taken at the expense of 99%. So we are open to constructive engagement with those particular groups. And I think, personally, and again, we'll have to talk about this as a combined group, it is in the interest of all stakeholders in Canada to talk about a vision for Canada that provides opportunity versus increased poverty. It's simple to me.
I'd like to answer that question. I think your question is extremely apropos. And what gets forgotten, and I'll use an example of Brother Menard and myself, we represent the majority of forestry workers in Canada. At one point, 65% of our membership worked for employers that were in bankruptcy protection. We pleaded with governments, with employers, to work on solutions. And what we got was the back of the hand. They were more concerned about killing their responsibility to pensioners, to killing the deficit in pension plans. We lived through that, where our members suffered 40 and 50% cuts to their pension plan while we pleaded with employers and governments to engage with us. And it is not our turning away from them. It's, as Ken said, industry and government have turned away from workers and taken care of banks and shareholders.
Tony, Tony from Sudbury. No, no, Charlie, we're not going by seniority here. Tony from Sudbury.
Well, within CAW, we have an organizing fund that is currently at 2%. But we spend what we require in organizing campaigns in excess of the 2%, Tony, but not we're near the 10% level, and it varies from year to year. What we're making a commitment in the new organization to do is to earmark 10% of the annual revenue specifically to organizing constantly as an organization. Within CAW, it's probably between 2 and 7. I'll let Gaetan answer for CEP.
Well, for CEP, we are currently putting 8% of our revenue to organizing. But, I understand money is important, and I think it's going to create lots of things, and that 10% is going to give $5 million per year for the next 5 years. But we also started with a fund of more than $12 million right from the beginning, because we have in CEP and in CAW already a fund for organizing. But what is more important is to create that culture of organizing. I think that we need each of our members becoming an organizer, becoming somebody who talk to their neighbors, who talk in their communities and saying, hey, we can help, we can organize your shop, we can. That is more important than the money. But the money will be there to support those activities, to support those locals who will want to organize in their community. No, what we said is we're going to put 10%. What we are proposing is we would put 10% of the revenue. Currently, if we put the revenue of the two organizations together, that 10% represents $5 million per year. $10 million per year, sorry. Yeah, $10 million per year.
Yeah. Only Tony Van Helpen would ask what's going to happen on the sixth year. Is there any other questions? Well, go ahead there, young man, and then I've got to grab some media people on the phone.
We in the CAW believe we are still members of the union, and we are treated fairly in the CAW. Some unions maybe they drop out after they retire, and I'm wondering if there's going to be any changes for the retirees in this new organization.
Yeah, you're going to be more active now. We're going to start that off without a speech. Dave, get over there and hug my retirees, because they play a significant role in the union. Get over there and give them a hug. Now, the retirees spoke, but the retirees have made such a contribution to the lives of the labor movement, the lives of working men and women throughout the country, and the retirees will have always a strong voice. Just take a look around under the leadership of Len Harris and the CAW. I always find it fascinating that every time we have a demonstration, there's more retirees than actives, and that's what we have to change on a new organization.
Just to clarify for the retirees, there is a spot on the National Executive Board for retirees representative as exists today within CAW.
I will have my
holy Christ.
I think Ken, right from the beginning, said that the proposal committee was trying to put together the best practice of each union. And I think, quite frankly, we tried in CEP to organize retirees, not with a very large success, certainly not with the success that you have achieved in CAW. This is a good practice from CAW that we will try to import and mix with our people and get the retirees engage as much as they are in CAW and in the new organization. They'll be central. I think you are playing a great role in this society. We're going to need you. We want to become active. You'll be active together with us.
Okay, you're not at 7:07 now. Okay, did I have a sister back there that had a question? Then we'll go on the phone. Okay, let's go to the phone. Oh, go ahead, sister. I'm sorry. Well, again, as Gaetan and Peter has already suggested, we will set up a committee to deal with the priorities
But I think our global objective is for workers in Canada to identify themselves with the new union. And as Dave Cole said in his opening remarks, all workers in all sectors need a union. And concentrating on one particular sector isn't on our agenda today. What's on our agenda is organizing unorganized.
Yeah, we have a question here.
Yeah, hi, my name's Alex Grant. I'm a proud member of CEP Local 2040, the freelance local, open to people without collective agreements. I work for Fight Back magazine, socialist magazine. And we heard from the retirees, and I think that's fantastic. We've got to organize for solid pensions for everybody and retirees issues. But we're seeing amazing movements of youth, especially in Quebec, around the students. And so I want to know what the new union is going to do for youth, organizing students, organizing young workers who are frequently the most oppressed and have the lowest levels of union representation. How can we organize them?
Another simple response from my perspective, and I know my colleagues will all want to chip in, young people inspire us. We inspire each other. We have common objectives. We have common goals. We got to bring our militancy together. And we got to pursue justice. And I think you're absolutely right. I think the students in Quebec deserve a great deal of recognition because what the students did in Quebec... You know, we've had two significant things happen in Canada in the last few months. The Quebec movement with students and the Occupy movement throughout Canada. And the facts of the matter is they've inspired the labor movement. And we're going to bring in those coalition partners, those folks that vision the same kind of justice for society. And there's going to be space in our union for all of them. And again, it's not what we're going to do for the young people. It's what the young people are going to do for us and what we do collectively. Because I don't think they need lecturing. I think what they need is a place of solidarity, friendship, and respect for one another, and that's what they're going to get from our new union.
So governments like Saskatchewan are in the midst of labor law reform. The Ontario Conservatives are calling for the necessity of labor law reform as a matter of fiscal survival. Are these concerns to you, and do you see it as a part of your organization's mandate to mount a counter-offensive?
It seems that you're asking all the good questions. We take the situation with the Wall government extremely serious. I would suggest you go take a look at our webpage. I presented our brief in Saskatchewan last week. We are challenging just imagine this. A government proposes in a document questions that break international law. It's like, do we want to talk about running red lights? Should we allow that? Should we allow drunk drivers? The Wall government had the audacity to propose in its changes breaking not one, not two, dozens of international laws. And we will challenge that on the streets and in the courts. They will not get away, any government, with turning its back on the rights of working class people in the world. And I think during the total public debate on these particular issues, when people look at it constructively and look at countries that and provinces that have strong labor movements, obviously have stronger in economic and social conditions, and obviously wages and benefits and conditions. So, again, in Canada, unfortunately, we're taking a look at the Republican policies of the United States. And I just ask everybody in this room, do you want Canada to look like the United States?
No.
Or do you want United States to look like Canada?
Yes.
And not just in Canada in today's times, but in the vision that we want to see, not just for this combined union, but for everybody, including the future, Mrs. Mansbridge. And I don't mean that by marrying Peter. I'm just trying to tell you, you're going to be on CBC lead show with those questions someday. Okay, is there any other... is there any other questions on the radio? On the radio, on the TV, on the phone. Okay, on the phone.
Your first question comes from Gino Conchi from CBC News Windsor. Please go ahead. I apologize if these questions have been asked. We were cut off for a while. First of all, did I hear Peter right? Is there a name in place already? And if so, when will you release it?
No, Gino, there's not a name in place. I think it would be in our best interest to go through the democratic processes of both unions, then establish an opportunity for our members to have some input on what kind of a name they want for their new union. So, no, we don't have a new name yet. And I do apologize for not calling you back last night, Gino, but I had a night in hell last night.
I can imagine. As you know, Ken, there's a contest here at Local 444. Some of the names tossed about are APEC, PACE, PECA, CAPE. What are your thoughts about that?
Piece of cake.
The way you just described them, I don't have any thoughts because at this particular time, I don't know what all of that stuff means. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I think all of us share an enthusiasm that's taken place throughout local unions in the country. And for them to engage what kind of union and the kind of name that they want in their union this early in the process shows the energy that's coming out of the process committee's work and the combined efforts of both unions. So I don't want to get into names, and one thing I don't want to do is upset my own local union.
Ken and Dave, what's the process to select a new leader?
Well, we'll do that at our combined convention. I mean, we'll get through both of our conventions, and then once we get through our both conventions and our membership hopefully endorse the recommendation of the process committee, and we move into 2013 with the idea of a combined union. At that convention, they'll elect a new leader and new leadership team. And again, I can just assure people today that there's no politics being played today. It's about what kind of a vision we want for the country. And the facts of the matter is we'll let our delegates decide who the next leadership of this union is going
to
be.
I'd like to answer that too, Kevin.
Oh, you didn't nominate yourself already?
That's a very common question, not only asked by the media, but our members. And I can tell you, as sure as the four of us are standing here, not one time, for one second, has there been any discussion about who the leaders will be of this union. It is not the question. The question is to build the union and to build the movement. And I can tell you, it has never taken place any discussion on the leadership of the new union.
Okay, Gino, do you have any other questions?
That's it, Ken. Thanks.
Any suggestions for the new leader?
I have no comment.
That's good for most journalists. No comment. Next question.
Your next question comes from Grace Macaluso from the Windsor Star. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ken and Dave, I believe.
Yes.
Coles. Yeah, my question it sort of elaborates a little bit on what Gino asked. I'd like to find out whether either one of you or both of you are interested in the leadership. Ken, are you planning to make a bid for the leadership? And same question to your counterpart.
We're interested in building a great union with great pride, with a great understanding that it isn't the leadership in isolation that's going to lead this movement. It's going to be the growth of the union, the activism we build on the ground. And quite frankly, if we do exactly what our process committee has established in writing, then quite frankly, the leader will be the face, but he won't be driving the activism. It'll be from community to community to local. And of course, so to answer your question, we've had absolutely no discussion in that area and don't intend to have any discussion on that particular area until we go into 2013 convention with both unions.
How will the new leader be selected? Is that going to be decided at the your respective or founding conventions?
Yes, it'll be we'll have delegates from throughout the country representing 310,000 members that will come to the convention with the endorsement of their local union to support a new president nominated from the floor. Yes.
And with respect to the structure of the union, will this new union result in any kind of streamlining or staff reductions in administration costs at your respective unions?
Well, not immediately. I mean, the facts of the matter is, we have great respect for for our support staff, for our service representatives, for those that work for our union today. And the idea is not talking about cuts. This isn't about cuts to the union. This is about building the union. This is about providing opportunity. So we're not talking about, what does this mean in terms of shrinking our staff. In fact, if you take a look at our vision,
We hope to give people opportunity to be part of this great organization. And the whole concept of letting people go means the union's in trouble, and we're not going to be in trouble if we implement this program. We are going to be in the forefront defending workers. So it's not about administration reductions. It's about defending the interest of our combined membership.
But then how do you ensure that it's not top-heavy, or doesn't appear to be top-heavy?
Well, just take a look at CAW today, which you experience. We're far from top-heavy. I mean, the facts of the matter is we rely so much on our service representatives on the ground, our local union leadership that get elected, our people on the ground. So, I mean, of course, you have to have national leadership run the organization and administer the organization. But we're not a top-heavy organization, and we don't intend to be a top-heavy organization. If you take a look at what Peter said in terms of a 25-person National Executive Board member, with 19 of those being rank-and-file leaders in major sectors of the economy and in major provinces, that's not top-heavy under any mechanism whatsoever.
And what will the sort of combined, the operating budget of this new union total?
In total, it'll be in excess of $100 million a year annual revenues. Again, and 10% of that, Grace, committed to organizing. 3.75 of that committed to education. 75% committed to the general fund of the union. 10% committed to the strike and defense fund of the union. There's a 1.25 left, if my math is correct, and that will be for a convention fund for the new organization, Grace.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions on the telephone?
Any other questions? Well, let me again, on behalf of us collectively, thank you folks for your patience, but mostly for your friendship and solidarity. We are going to be an organization that speaks for men and women. Tony, did you doze off? Go ahead. I don't sleep, Tony. You know that. What's that? You know, I don't think there was a particular issue. Peter, you can...
No, I don't think there was a single issue, Tony. I think the most difficult thing for the proposal committee to do was to keep focused on kind of the 12 guiding principles that we put up on the board to steer the discussions rather than, revert back to, well, this is the way that we do it because, and so this is the way we should do it going forward. As we talked about earlier with respect to retirees, we looked at the best practices of both organizations and talked about how we mesh those together but wanted to be careful that we weren't, doing something different just for the sake of doing something different where we had good practices in place. So it was a question, as I've said often, although we're creating something new here, and that's the commitment, it's to create something new, not just to, blend the two organizations, we're not starting from a blank page. We all come with our histories, our respective cultures, our own prejudices, quite frankly, and it's, getting over them as you're discussing how the new takes shape, which was, I think, from a personal point of view, not an organizational point of view, was the challenge throughout those discussions.
There has been no formal discussions with anyone. There has been numerous questions by various union leaders on the process, and the answer is always the same. Wait till you see the document, wait till the founding convention is finished, and then we'll have a discussion. We are not going to be distracted right now by anything other than launching a new union. And there is worldwide attention, and I'm being very serious about this. Both Peter and I represent our unions internationally, and there's worldwide attention being paid to the process because it's open and transparent, and it's getting outside the box. So what happens after our founding convention, I can only tell you that I am really encouraged by the general interest by the labor movement in general, both here in Canada and around the world.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, sister. Well, I can only tell you that the process committee has went to a number of provinces, a number of union halls. From the CAW perspective, I have probably attended 15 to 20 membership meetings in the last 6 or 7 months, including three different visits to Local 222, so and other organizations. So we're on the ground. Our leadership's on the ground. And between now and the convention in 2013, we are going to try to address as many membership meetings as we possibly can. Okay, take the last one, Tony, because I got to go, man. Not only because I got to be somewhere else.
Well, we are going from, for the CAW perspective, it was based on hours per month. On CEP side, we are based on percentage of earnings. So we agreed together that we would go on a percentage basis, but it won't affect anybody. It won't change the current money they are paying right now, if I can simplify it like that. But it's going to be as a percentage of wages.
Yeah. Will that mean
No. No. No, in fact, for CEP, it's going to be a slight decrease, and for CEW members, it should be about the same for most of the people. Because it's a percentage, it could create some slight differences, but it really, the thinking behind all the works we have done around that was to make sure nobody will get an increase of his rate.
Just to comment sort of on the significance, Tony, any changes in pennies.
Okay, thank you, everybody.
For Rabble.ca, this is John Bonner. Thank you for listening to John Bonner's audio blog, hosted by Rabble.ca and the Rabble Podcast Network.